Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
I'm excited today to be joined by Pastor Kim Stidworthy, Jonas Hill, and Aiden Woodward, all part of the Next Gen staff at Citizen Church in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Tune in today for a fresh perspective and practical advice for today's youth. I am so excited to have you all with me today on Table Talks. I have a whole panel. I mean, usually it's just one person or two. And today, like I mentioned, I have our Next Gen team from Citizen Church in Albuquerque. And this is Pastor Kim, and she's over all the Next Gen. This is our middle school pastor. This is my grandson, my oldest grandson, Aiden. And this is our high school pastor, who I'll take him as my grandson. He's a good friend. This is Jonas Hill. And we're blessed to have you today. I'm so excited about this episode because, you know, I was just thinking today that, you know, years ago, not too many years ago, if you wanted to talk about something this important, like this generation, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, if you wanted to talk to parents or our community and let them know what was happening in the lives of these students, you wouldn't be able to do it, except maybe if you got to speak publicly at a church setting or at a school. But now we have this platform of a podcast to be able to talk about, to me, super important things. So most people have already heard through the podcast. I mean, I have three grown sons and daughters-in-law, but nine grandchildren. And they range, y'all all know them, they range in the ages from 3 years old to almost 21. So I have Gen Alpha and Gen Z for grandchildren. And I think that's why this episode is so important to me, because I see our culture, you know, we live in it every day, and I want for them great things. And society, media would tell us that it's all bad, but we have great news today, and we are very hopeful for this generation. So we're just going to jump right into it. So Kim, I get very confused. Okay, the whole generation thing, I don't even know which generation I'm in.
It gets confusing. You like don't know where the years are at.
I know. I'm just old. I'm 63, and I think I can't remember which one I'm in. But anyway, but the whole Gen Z. So before Gen Z was millennials.
Yes.
And but the group that you work with now, the age of students that you work with in our church,
yes,
are Gen Z and Gen Alpha.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about those. Like, what are the ages of those?
Yeah.
Generations?
So we have incoming sixth graders about 11 years old right now, and then all the way through 18, depending on when they turn 18, their senior year. And it's actually crazy. Like, even if you look at, you know, high school versus middle school, you do see a split. Generally, I think we were talking about it. It's hard to tell exactly what the year is, but generally we're seeing our incoming freshmen are about the start of that Generation Alpha age. So about 15 down is we're getting all middle school Gen Alpha, and then upper high school is the kind of tail end of those Gen Z generation. And I feel like you do see a good shift and a good split between those two. And they really deal specifically with, you know, those two age groups. What do you see specifically?
You both are Gen Z.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of on the tail end of it.
So how old are you, Jonas? How old are you?
26. I'm getting old. 26.
And Aiden is 19.
Wow.
I still can't believe that. But you guys, and you work with young adults too. Yeah. But anyway, so you work with high school students.
Yeah. It's interesting for sure. So I grew up with a lot of the students that I'm helping lead now. I was kind of on the tail end of that. But growing up with technology is a really big one. And I think a lot of students are still trying to navigate what that looks like. But I think students are also looking for like authenticity. I think especially high school students, they can smell fake from a mile away. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of students as well with technology, with social media, are like comparing themselves to other people. I think that's a really big one, which ramps anxiety. Comparison's a big thing right now. But yeah, like Kim said, like you can see a big difference between our high school students and our middle school students. And maybe Aiden can speak a little bit more to Gen Alpha. Mm-hmm. But just seeing them grow up with artificial intelligence now is a big thing.
Yeah.
Like Alexa,
I do Google, know what that is.
Yeah. But that's all Generation Alpha is growing up on,
yeah,
and what they're kind of learning from, which is interesting.
I want to interrupt a second because when you're talking, you said Gen Z, what they really love is authenticity. There is a lot of irony to that, mm-hmm, because they live on social media and it is the most inauthentic,
oh, yeah,
thing there is. So they want authenticity,
yeah,
but they're in a world that's totally inauthentic.
Yeah.
So there's a conundrum there that's, mm-hmm, really difficult, yeah, that they're struggling through. There lies the struggle, right?
Mm-hmm,
what,
exactly,
do you think, Aiden? What about the middle school? What about that younger Gen Alpha group?
They're crazy.
They're totally digital children.
Yes.
They're totally digital.
Yes.
Yeah. They would, some would say they're iPad kids.
Mm-hmm.
So they grew up on the iPad, just watching the iPad, because some parents would give it to them.
They can't eat a meal without watching a movie or a show or something like that.
So. We do that. I mean, even as a grandparent, because you just every now and then need a break. And there's so many parents that say, I would never, ever give that much screen time to my child until you have children. And then you're trying to eat a meal or fly on an airplane,
oh, yes,
or sit in something quiet. But then you give that to them. But digital children. And I think I noticed, and Layden, what would you say to this, that you preach to, you speak every week, most every week, to 6th, 7th, and 8th graders at Citizen Youth. And I come a lot of the time to watch you and hear you speak. That's hard because they want interactive.
Yeah.
It's hard to speak to someone when they want to do all the talking too.
Yeah.
So they want to be entertained. They want interactive because of their digital kids. How do you feel? How does that work with you? Because I see you up there. You're going hard. And you're funny. You're really funny. You're innately funny. You're just funny by nature. And you try, you work so hard with them, but does it ever get a little frustrating speaking to 6th, 7th, and 8th graders?
Yeah, a lot of times I have to like, guys, come on. Get them engaged, kind of, because they're so everywhere,
mm-hmm,
just because of what they grew up on, just on,
yeah,
The fast, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. So it's just like really keeping them engaged, as many illustrations as I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what's so interesting about youth ministry right now is because of what you said. They're in such a media heavy world that is so interactive and so, mm-hmm, engaging. And so our role now is to say, like, church should not be the boring thing. Like, if they're getting so much interaction outside in the world through movies and music and all these secular things, like, we have to put in the effort behind on not necessarily just like outdoing the world, but,
yeah,
just in saying, like, you know, God and faith,
yeah,
can be interactive. It can be engaging. Mm. And I think that's where a lot of people get it wrong, because they're not keeping up with what they're going through outside of outside of church.
Yeah.
And you have to compensate for that in the church to make sure, yeah, they're staying just as engaged and wanting to be a part.
It's,
yeah,
I mean, I'm just, my mind's just going, because I know you guys meet all the time trying to think, what can we do? What can we do? And it's not, like you said, to try to outdo everything, because A, we don't have the budget that media has and,
yeah,
television and movies to keep up with that. But you're constantly trying to think, what do they need? But how can we present it,
mm-hmm,
in a way that they'll accept it? So that leads to my next question, because the challenges, it is not the same raising students, middle school and high school students today,
mm-hmm,
than the same as it was, obviously, when we raised our sons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the same. So the challenges, you've hit on some of them already.
Yeah.
But what would you guys say? So Jonas, for high school, what would you say some of the biggest challenges would be for those students?
Yeah, I was actually reading an article this morning about, and I think there's some truth to this, but there's almost these defining events that kind of define each generation. Like for millennials, it was 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
But then for Gen Z and some of Gen Alpha, it was COVID-19. And I know we're a little bit past it now, but, you know, being what, 4.5 years ago or so, I think it was a big defining moment, especially for a lot of these high school students.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Aiden could speak to it, being in high school during that time. But I think anxiety is at an all-time high right now. We're seeing a lot of, you know, cases of depression, stuff like that. Suicide rates are at an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, these outgoing kids, very sociable kids, got shut down for so long,
mm-hmm,
and everything went online.
Mm-hmm.
And for what we're seeing right now in our youth ministry and in our world today is there's such a battle for truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we're not afraid to package the truth with love and preach the gospel. because students need to hear that. And I think if I could tell any parent anything, I think a lot of parents have to shift their mentality from, you know, back when I was growing up, the only truth that I was really able to receive was from my parents.
Yeah.
But now kids are able to get online and they think they know what the truth is, but they have all this access at their fingertips. And I think it creates these challenges with parents and, you know, what students are learning in their schools and online. And so it's kind of hard to navigate those things, but we're not going to shy away from the, you know, the truth and speak the Bible with love. And that's something that we're kind of facing right now in our ministry, is just a battle for truth, for sure.
Interesting. Kim, what do you think on the same thought with challenges? So you have conversations with students, all three of you,
yeah,
every week. I see you at Citizen Coffee. I mean, I see you guys at the church and out in life having these private conversations, one-on-one times with students. And I know you know what they're going through. I mean, what do they wish their parents knew? And I'm going to ask you the same thing, Aiden. What do you think they wish their parents knew? That you spoke about anxiety and depression. Yeah. Parents want to help. I mean, would you agree the majority of parents,
yeah,
they want their kids to thrive? I mean, yeah, most parents aren't saying, I want you to fail. I want you to hate your life. Yeah. They're thinking, what can I do?
Yeah.
You know, maybe the parent's part of the problem. I don't know. But what do they wish their, yeah, parents knew?
And I actually asked some students this question because I was so interested, because I kind of got the gist of what I think they would say. But it actually, I feel like even some of the answers surprised me. One, I think just in general, I feel like Gen Z specifically is largely misunderstood. Because generally when people talk about Gen Z, it's very negative. Now, some of it is obviously true. They do have increased, like we're talking about, increased anxiety rates, increased suicide, depression rates. But I feel like that's all we talk about is Gen Z is this, they're digital, they're on their phones, I never listen, they're this, they're that. And I feel like they're just largely misunderstood and everything is like this negative cloud around this generation. And when I'm having conversations with students, one of the ones that surprised me the most and just really touched me was one of the kids talked to me about, if I could tell my parents anything or wish they understood anything about my life, is how much I need them. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't tell them that. And honestly, I would not be surprised if they thought I didn't need them, because, you know, they're teenagers. You're never going to look at your teenager and think, man, they want me to hang out with them all the time. But they were expressing, like, sometimes I feel like they let me do my thing so much and I miss just them being present more in my life and dealing with, you know, hard questions or things I need answers to. And like he was saying, they have the world at their fingertips. They're going to find an answer to something if we as parents or we as their family members don't give them the answers. And sometimes I think we get so nervous about, you know, overpowering their life or, you know, micromanaging that their life, that we do the complete opposite and we're not present enough. And so I think that's one thing, is just, I think they want you involved even if you don't think that they want you involved. They want you present in their life. And I think also with the mental health stuff, I think one thing that they would wish parents would understand is like really how real it is, like how serious it can be. Because to us, I'm a millennial, and when I grew up, like, yeah, we talked about mental health stuff, but it was always like, you're depressed, whatever. Like you would just throw out words. But it is so real in this generation. And sometimes with us, when we think, oh, it wasn't like this when I was in high school, but it is so different. And they just want to be heard and they just want to be listened to. And I think for a parent, I think a great approach would be not to always seek to just to tell them what to do, but to seek to understand. You have to understand them. You have to learn them, like learn your student, learn their culture, learn their generation. Because if we don't do it, then we're parenting out of what we grew up in, which is never going to work. It's not, you know, it's not going to correlate to what they're going through. So I think we have to learn our students more and understand they need us. They want us, even if they don't say it. And that they really are struggling more than we think they are.
They want to be validated,
yeah,
because it's one thing. I understand it. I mean, I can just picture what you're saying with students that I've had the privilege to work with over the last couple of years, but not to just, sometimes parents, if they don't watch it, they can almost placate. It feels like it's a little condescending. Oh yeah, I mean, because we think we were there. I was there 50 years ago. So it's not the same world, but they want to be validated. And I think, you know, I watch you guys do that. So you use your platform of youth ministry, not only in the large group to validate them and to give hope, but you also one-on-one. And, you know, Aiden, I've talked about this already, but watching you with our middle school. So we, at our church now, we're divided middle school and high school, which is, you know, I think proven to be a positive step for us. But I hear you on that stage, basically what, you know, Kim is saying, listening, but validating, because if we don't, you know, I would say a huge percentage of those students that you guys speak with every week, you may be the only ones validating, because maybe the parent is not involved, or maybe the parent's not around. We have so many different family, the way family units are comprised now. And I know you're conscious of that. So would you agree that you, when you're writing a sermon or you're going to talk to students, that you're thinking, I've got to give them hope. I've got to validate, because validation, it makes you feel hopeful, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what you, is that, how do you feel when you're writing a sermon for, I mean, you're talking 11, 12 and 13 year olds. I mean, they just got out of elementary school where somebody
is a special gift.
It really is. And how do you, when you're pulling that all together, what are you thinking? Like, how are you writing a sermon for them?
I don't know. I really don't, but just encouragement. They need lots of encouragement always. Because who said that? I think it was Jonas. That they're, or no, Kim said it, that they're always just getting the end of the stick almost. So they just need to be encouraged constantly. And back to what you were saying with, I just feel like they're needing a lot of attention. And I can look at it and be like, oh, you're just needing attention. Like kind of just downplaying it. But they need this attention because I don't know what it stems from. Maybe their parents aren't giving them attention, but I feel like it's our job to give them that attention, to give them that validation, keep encouraging them, because if they're not getting at home, why not give it to them at youth? And
Wow, that this is not an episode or a podcast episode to make parents feel bad, because I'm hoping that people will listen that have siblings that are in this age group or grandchildren and children. But, you know, even if you're, if there's a parent listening that's thinking, I don't, you know, by the time I get home, I'm tired, and they act like they walk off to their room and shut the door. And I would say they don't mean that. So you can do things as parents. So first of all, my children were not allowed to walk in the house and go to their room and shut the door. And, you know, I'm real big on the table and family time and family dinner. So I still strongly champion the cause of the dinner table and having a meal together, because as I mentioned in the cookbook and the, you know, the forward to that is the dinner table. When you can look across from a student or your child at the dinner table for families, you're going to see in their eyes something that you won't know when they walk in the house and they go get on their phone in the bedroom. Because human nature is, if I've not had a great day, is to be alone, is to go lick our wounds and be alone. And as parents, as, you know, mentors in students' lives, and parents and grandparents, our job is to get them out of that long, pull them out of that bedroom or lonely place and say, you know, I need to see you. I mean, you don't say it, I need to see in your eyes, but you're saying, sit with me, I want to see your eyes. And do you guys know this? Students don't always want to talk. And as you become a parent, you are a parent. Kim has two toddlers, but when they get older, you'll see that most of the time they think they don't want to talk to us. They don't want you to know, but they do, right? It's, they don't want you to know, but they do want you to know what's going on in their lives. I really feel that. You were saying, so Jonas, were you raised in a church home?
I was kind of in and out of church. I come from a very broken family. My parents got divorced when I was about 3 or 4 years old. And then my stepmom came onto the scene pretty much immediately. And right in that, you know, kind of situation, I started formulating these thoughts, you know, about what family was, because my family looks so different, you know, than a lot of other families. And so, I actually, you know, started telling myself that I was weird, that my family was weird, and all these things. But if I could, you know, go back and, you know, tell myself anything, I would probably tell myself I wasn't weird, but a lot of people were actually going through the same exact things. I just didn't know about it. And so that brought a lot of, you know, difficulties and stuff like that. I feel for, you know, the broken families and people who have step parents and step siblings and all that sort of stuff. It's hard to navigate those things early on.
Boundaries are not easy. And, you know, it's just not an easy thing. And I look at you, what you've done with your life, and that you're able to give back to students who may be going through some of the same things, you know, as you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me, the reason why I'm so passionate about youth ministry, is because I want to help students who are going through the exact same thing that I went through when I was their age, and just help them navigate those things. Because at the end of the day, they're not going to get that from their teachers. They're not going to get that from social media. Mm-hmm. They need to get that from someone who loves God mm-hmm. and has been through it and walked through it. That way they can provide insight from that perspective. And so mm-hmm. that's why I'm just thankful that I get to do what I get to do, you know? So
it's, and you guys are perfect for it. And, you know, everybody has a story, right? Mm-hmm. Even, you know, Kim, you were raised going to church your whole life in a church home, but I have noticed, even with myself, every individual has a story behind the story. Yeah. We all go through our own thing. We all go through our own time where we find ourselves, mm-hmm. we find our faith. Mm-hmm. You know, we get our bearings and we find out who we're going to be, yeah. which, you know, you mentioned, students getting their information off social media. And, you know, I read something just recently about that. A lot of millennials too, but for sure Gen Z, they basically get all their news of what's happening in the world and in our country on TikTok. Mm-hmm. Nobody turns on the news like my husband and I do. Pop and KK, we come in, the news is on usually in our house. We all watch the news all the time. But Gen Z, they're on TikTok. Whatever TikTok says, we're talking about truth. Mm-hmm. That's where they get their truth. So I was wanting to talk a little bit about current cultural trends. Can't talk. But that's one of them that yeah. this Gen Z, I don't know that Gen Alpha really cares about the news yet, but everything they, sixth grade up through college, or whatever social media says, mm-hmm. we don't even look to see if the ad was sponsored, to see if somebody paid to tell you something that yeah. really was partially the truth.
Yeah.
They get their truth there. What are other trends that are in our culture right now that, because I honestly, I don't think some parents and grandparents understand what the trends are with their yeah. students.
Which I would say is an extremely important thing to get right away. You have to know what is going on in your students' mm-hmm. world, even if they're not engaging with it. You have to be ahead of the gate. Mm-hmm. So like we're saying with TikTok, like if your kid is on TikTok, you should be on TikTok because you need to be watching and seeing everything that's, you know, getting filtrated through their mind. I would caution people to be very, very cautionary with social media mm-hmm. because especially like with TikTok, the trend right now is just everyone gets their voice heard, like the your truth kind of thing. Yeah. Like it's your truth. And so when you go on social media platforms, it's just people sharing their opinions, which wouldn't be bad if it's not as unfiltered as it is in the social media world. So if they're, you know, scrolling through TikTok, they're seeing every single opinion under the sun and getting, you know, blasted with this is right, this is right, this is right. And it can get confusing even for us as adults. Oh, yeah. And so I can't imagine with someone who has a brain that's still functioning and still, you know, growing and learning and like a sponge still, that they're soaking in this stuff and they're trying to filter it and say, okay, what is, I'm hearing this from church, this from my friends, these from leaders in our country, this from teachers, what is actually right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is huge, as well as just like music across the board is all, I mean, music has been, you know, obviously popular throughout every generation, but I don't know. I think there's just something unique happening right now with specifically secular music. And like, we think secular music was bad when we were students. It is getting worse and worse. You know, child pop stars that are growing up, people that they've grown up with. Like I think of like JoJo Siwa, like our kids in Gen Z grew up with somebody like JoJo.
I know her from Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. And like she had, and like as a kid star, she was cute. She had like cute little kid songs. And these, like our students right now, especially Gen Alpha, grown up with her. And then now they see the music that she is, you know, putting out there and the music videos. And like, that is their example. That is who they're watching. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. It's always like, I think it's like the find yourself. Who are you as an adult? And
explore
all your options, all of this stuff is insane what they're getting exposed to. And it's more than probably we realize as parents.
So there are, I want to say this, I can tell you for sure. And I know y'all know many parents would say, my kids are not on social media. Mm-hmm. My kids don't see TikTok. They don't have a TikTok. They don't have an Instagram. They probably do. If they're in middle school or high school, they've got one. It may be on their friend's phone, mm-hmm. so you don't know, mm-hmm. but they've got one. And if they don't have their own, they're borrowing mm-hmm. friends, their electronics. That's one reason these days I wouldn't allow my children to have sleepovers, mm-hmm. my middle school kids to have sleepovers at people's house because you don't know what's on their electronics. I would let them go to family and that's all. But I would say parent, grandparent, dig deeper if you feel your middle school or high school student is not getting access to social media somehow or TikTok. Because I would say, what percent would you say are looking at social media or TikTok?
100.
95 to 100.
I was like, unless it's a very, very sheltered, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, even like when, so social media wasn't as big when I was growing up. It was, mm-hmm. it was still big, but anytime I was grounded or got my phone taken away, I always found a way. You know, kids are just gonna find a way, even if, and that's the hard reality of, and if you're a parent listening, I'm sorry, that's just how it is. But kids are gonna find a way to, you know, even when you take their phone, they're gonna find a way to get online. They're gonna find a way, maybe it's through a friend, maybe it's through something at school. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
I think that with all of the cultural challenges, I think it was the House on Fire series that we did. Mm-hmm. My dad talked about the different agendas and like this whole scheme that they went through to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think right now, TikTok is just getting it right to them, all the agendas, just mm-hmm. convincing them this. It's not this super long process anymore. It's they're getting it right away.
I mean, the first somebody's TikTok, they're saying it straight away. They're not, so you're saying, in other words, now used to, we would, whoever they would take their time and try to reel and put the bait out there. Now it's just like, there it is.
And what's interesting is like, we don't really live, like, yes, photography and photos are big, but we live in like a video based culture now. Like social media, even when we were in high school growing up, it was all just photo based, but now it's like clips mm-hmm. and reels are the biggest thing. And so companies are doing a better job of figuring out, like, you could scroll on your Instagram feed, TikTok feed, and you're getting things that, like, I'm seeing things that of people that I don't even follow. And that's all a part of like this algorithm. And so companies are tracking algorithms to reach people of things that they're not even knowing that they're being exposed to.
Yeah. You're all talking. And
exactly.
Yeah.
What's also interesting too is like, I think news media does a really good job of this, but the way that they caption their headlines, that's all they need to really capture people in, because people aren't going to read the whole article. They're just going to see what the headline says and mm-hmm. believe that is what the truth is.
And I don't listen. So when I'm watching reels at night, when I'm laying there, because I'm sucked into the world of Instagram and TikTok, mm-hmm. I only watch the ones where the words are on there too, the text, because I don't want to turn it up. I don't want to mm-hmm. listen. So I read it. So then you're seeing it too, which is a double.
Which these two generations are very visual heavy, you know, kind of what he was touching on earlier. It's all visual based, and that's how you know, get people in. That's how you capture mm-hmm. these young teens' attention.
Which just leads me to the next, you know, thing I wanted to talk about, because the cultural trend, I mean, you hit it. And if someone listening thinks that the person that they love, that's Gen Alpha or Gen Z, is not somehow in this, assume they are. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're not, but make the assumption that they are. But then that's where you guys come in. We know that. Churches, the faith community understands that. And that's why we champion this generation so strongly. And if people go to a church that doesn't champion the next generation, this Gen Alpha and Gen Z, I would leave this week and find another church. Because I'm fine. Like, I'm a Christian and I'm going to go to heaven, and I don't even really care what, I mean, I don't need to be entertained by a sermon, or I've learned a lot in my 63 years of going to church, but the next generation, we are in a battle, and we're willing to, I don't want to use such a strong word as fight, but honestly fight for the generation that we're talking about right now. And so the faith community and faith and values. And I couldn't imagine, even as our sons grew up, you know, in the late 1990s and then in the early, you know, 2000s, doing parenting without the partnership of my church. But today, I wouldn't even attempt it. There is no way I would think that as a parent or grandparent, I could do this by myself, that I would need to know that there is another entity out there that's partnering and giving values that my student or my child needs. So parent and church community, how, I know y'all have a lot to say about that, but what would you say to parents right now? Because you guys do this for your full-time job.
Yeah.
You get up every day. This is what you breathe. Live, eat, and breathe every day is students, 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 and how to help them to navigate this life and love Jesus and have eternal life.
Yeah.
So what would you say to parents? What do you, what, how important is their faith?
It's minimal.
Yeah, not that big of a deal.
So if 100%, we say we're going to assume every student is somehow getting a hold of social media, 100%.
Yeah.
But how many percent come to church, youth? Of the whole Albuquerque, we live in Albuquerque, yeah. So of Albuquerque and the millions, I would say hundreds of thousands of students this age that come here, would you say it's 1%?
I just calculated this. There's about 35,000 to 40,000. That's just high school students. In our youth ministry, we only see about 300 of that a week.
If you add all the other
churches and stuff like that,
that,
I'm probably bad at math. Yeah, math. Aiden's probably the best at math.
It's very low.
We still have a lot of work to do, for sure.
So you're fighting an uphill battle.
Yes. Yeah.
And so let's talk about it. Faith and students. Why?
I had a thought of something I think, and my parents were guilty of this, and I just wanted to preface too, no parent is ever going to be perfect, for sure. And I think that's okay. But I think a lot of parents probably do a bad job of assuming that their kids know what the truth is. And I think my dad and my stepmom probably, you know, did that a lot growing up. Especially we were in a Christian family. We were, you know, we would actively go to church. But there was just a lot of things about God and about faith that I just didn't know. And I think my parents, excuse me, just kind of assumed that I knew what the truth was. But at the end of the day, like your teenagers, your kids, never assume that they know what the truth is. And I think it's so important as parents to constantly, you know, not in like a weird or an odd way that's gonna like turn your kid off from church, but do your best to speak the truth with love. And I think with love is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to speak truth, but we all know of the parents that are trying to speak truth, but they're not doing it in a loving way.
And it becomes law without grace.
Exactly.
And love.
And so you always have to package it with love. And the Bible talks about that, especially a lot in the New Testament. But yeah, never assume that your kids know what the truth is, because at the end of the day, they don't, and they're getting fed a lot of lies from social media. And so, that's what I would say.
Because we believe there's one truth.
Exactly.
And so they're given many truths all day, every day, starting with the time the first bell rings at school, or they online school or whatever, they're meeting other people. So they get many truths a day, and we believe there is one truth, one way. Mm-hmm. And so you're you know, counteracting that. Yeah. I mean,
and if I could say anything else too on this point, I would say it's okay to change your methods if your methods aren't working for parenting. I think my dad, he came from kind of a military family, and he just, there was one way of doing things that he, you know, was raised in. But for me, that's not the kind of parenting that I wanted or I knew that I needed. And so if I could even go back, I would, you know, kind of communicate that with my dad. But to give a practical example of this, we have a leader in our youth ministry right now. His daughter, I think she's in middle school. She's going to our youth ministry. But he started serving in youth because he wants to learn, you know, how teenagers, how they're wired, how they work, so it can, you know, help improve his parenting. And so I think it, for any of the parents out there that are listening, do your best to learn how teenagers actually work. Mm-hmm. That way your methods can reach them in the best way possible.
Yeah.
And I think that's the number one thing that parents are missing right now. Mm-hmm. Is they don't know the right way to go about parenting. And not that there's always a right or wrong, but sometimes the methods that you're doing just aren't working.
But every child, it's not the same for every child, even in your own family.
Exactly.
Everybody gets parented differently. And we believe in the whole faith partnership. So, we believe it so much that we have a separate service once a week just for students. So, I mean, I do know this answer, but I'd love you to speak to it. How important is it, do you feel, Aiden, for parents to adjust whatever they need to adjust in their child's schedule to get them to church, to if their church has a youth group? How important is that?
So important. It has to be the biggest priority. I remember I would get in trouble in middle school because I wasn't the best in middle school, but even if I was grounded, I was always on the back row with my dad every week. Or if I had football practice, come right after. Youth was just a big priority.
Yeah.
So when it came later in my high school career and like I wasn't really in the youth, like I wasn't loving it, I knew I needed to be there. And then eventually
parents, when they ground their kids, they ground them from youth because they think it is fun for their student.
Yeah.
But your dad's philosophy, who is my oldest son, he would know because that was our philosophy. We never ground you from church, anything church. I will take everything else in your life away, but you're grounded to church. I mean, you're going to go to church no matter what. Yeah. But what your dad did is he went to and sat on the back row with you to make sure that you were getting church. But everybody parents different. Yeah. But boy, you said it, priority, because you're thinking, parents, if you would just get your 6th, 7th, and 8th graders here every week, I could save you a lot of grief because I'm gonna champion your cause as a parent. I'm making you look good.
Yeah. And I would say in regards to that, like what you prioritize, they will see and they will replicate. So when they're growing up and they're, you know, obviously when they're middle school, high school, they're super involved with hobbies and sports and all these activities. But we see so many different cases of parents that prioritize sports. And when you prioritize sports, like that is the trait, that is the character trait that they will carry on into college, into their life. But you have to tell them when they're young that no matter what, church is a priority. And it's not because a sermon is going to just, like what we are teaching is just going to save their entire life. It's a community. Mm-hmm. I go back to when I was, you know, going to youth. I went to youth at this church and started coming as in 6th grade. And I was huge into athletics. I played sports up and down the whole year. But church was a priority in my family and my parents made sure I went. And when I look back, I don't remember, Pastor Destin was my youth pastor, and I don't remember 98% of the sermons he ever preached to me. I don't remember that. I remember they were good, but I remember is the community. I remember the leaders that poured into me. I remember the truths that was spoken over me. I remember being at church late at night because we'd have small groups. I remember like that was the place I was at. That was my home. That was my safe space. And so at the end of the day, what I want my kids to understand when they're teenagers is that sports will go away one day. Like everything, your school will be done one day, but church, your faith, your walk with God is constant and never changes. Yeah. And you have to get that right when you're young, when they're still developing habits. Mm-hmm. So when they get into college, that is the habit they're walking forward with and, you know, instilling in their life.
Sure. I obviously agree with everything you're saying. And I'm thinking the community thing is so super important. And, you know, Your kids, you want them to win. I'll say this. Some group, every student has their social groups. Mm-hmm. There is a social group that's going to win in their life. Mm-hmm. So I'm pleading the case that let the social group at church win. And they're not going to be perfect because imperfect kids come to church just like they go to school, just like they go everywhere. But then you've got the word of God that's being spoken and you know that the Christian values are there. So there will be a group that's louder, I guess, in your student's life. The loudest group, I think. Let it be godly people. Let the loud group be the godly people because there will be the loudest group. Yeah. To your student. And boy, do we see that all the time. Yeah. We touched on this because boy, our time's going to go by fast, but we touched on, and I think Kim said it, but having conversations with your students. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you're, a sibling listening or a parent or a grandparent, you think, okay, I want to know more about my child. I want to know how would that parent or grandparent have that open conversation? How do you just walk in now today, you've heard the podcast and go, okay, we're going to be open and honest with each other and we're going to all go to church all the time now. I mean, how do they, it's not easy to talk to a teenager all the time. What's a relationship you have to build. Yeah. It's not
and
a
I think that's, and that's what it is. You have to take the time. It's not an easy fix, but you have to take the time to build. What I said earlier was seek to understand first.
Yes.
Seek to learn them. Ask questions. Say like, what is going on at school? Not to reprimand them, but just say like, what do you see? What is big right now? Seek to understand. And I would say another huge thing with how to have conversations is you have to create a safe space for vulnerability.
Yeah.
There has to be either it's a space in your house or a time where you foster, you know, open dialogue to say like, this is a time where we can talk about things that you're going through. Now, obviously parenting will be a part of that. So if they are vulnerable and say like, this is what I'm dealing with, this is what I'm struggling with. It's not saying we take away the parenting and say we can't put in, you know, rules and consequences to actions that our kids have. But I think there is a big difference to where I'm creating a space for vulnerability. And if my child comes to me and is open with me and says, this is what I'm struggling with, I'm going to handle that a lot differently than when I find out something that they're hiding. And I think sometimes as parents, we treat them both the same because obviously we want them to have correct behavior. But I would argue the fact that you would much rather prefer your child to feel safe enough to come to you and say, I'm struggling with this, because you've created a space for it.
Yeah.
And yes, take the parenting steps to figure out how to correct the behavior, but that be a moment where you say, I'm not going to yell. I'm not going to, like, we are going to talk about this. And they know that, you know, I'm here for them. And, you know, like I said, it's a safe space versus you finding something out that they're hiding.
I hope people really, you know, will listen to what you just said. And if you're listening and driving down the street, you need to rewind and listen again, because, you can't deal with what's hidden.
Mm-hmm.
You can only deal with what's brought to light. And I wish, you know, just knowing that even, you know, 30 years ago for us, just to be able to think, where's the safe space? I feel that that's a table. Yeah. It's like we're sitting around a table now. Yeah. I feel like if you make family time a priority, and you can change that this week. Like if you're looking for something to do this week that you can start creating safe spaces, is like I mentioned earlier, have a meal together. You don't have to ask them at the first meal together, tell me everything in your life. But if you'll just be there and have fun and laugh and not let the table be a place of correction and discipline, but let it be the safe, sacred space, then you can, that's a start. I mean, you don't have to think about it. Just get some hamburger helper and make some food this week and sit down with your children and listen.
Yeah.
Because they're going to tell you, even if they're not telling you,
they're
going to know.
I think the relationship is so important because I think parents just want to know all the truth, but they neglect the relationship first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have to build the relationship first. And that naturally over time, the truth is just going to come out. And I think that's something that if I could go back to and tell my parents that, it's that I think they wanted to seek the truth for my life, the things that I was hiding, but sometimes they weren't willing to put in the work and build our relationship. So I was hiding things and I wanted them to have that relationship with me.
Mm-hmm.
But once, you know, once we're intentional with building our relationship with our kids or, you know, our students in our ministry, once we build those natural relationships, they're more willing to come up to us and tell us the things that are going on in their lives. And that's just, you know, kind of how it works.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We're going to start wrapping this up, which I really think that I could do this for 4 episodes, but I wanted just a practical tip. So, you know, you've been giving them the whole time, a practical tip. So, I have asked you to come today basically to speak for students. I mean, you're here speaking on their behalf to, you know, speak to parents in their life. And so I feel like there are probably parents listening saying, well, you know, I already listen to them, but I would say probably not as much as you could. What my tip would be, and we're going to go around the table, but my tip would be stay up late, wait up for your kids when they come home. I found that our boys wanted to talk more when they came in at night. They had something to say, but if you're too busy on your Netflix show or already in bed or, you know, your wind down time, if you'll take the time to wait up and talk. Most students are really talkative after a big event or something at church or a football game. Be willing to let them come in and come in your room and just chat, and don't be too taken up with yourself. Because honestly, once you choose to be a parent, in my opinion, you chose to take second seat to your kids and their priority.
Yeah.
So, Jonas, parent tip.
Parent tip. I would say the number one thing is find things that your kids enjoy and do those things with your kids.
Beautiful.
For me, that was baseball, sports growing up. And that's what my dad did a really good job at, is I loved baseball. And that was how we bonded. That's how we traveled, you know, the country. I played sports. And when we had those long car rides or when we were in between games, like, we connected and we bonded. But obviously not every kid is going to be in sports, but figure out what that is for your student, for your kids. And I think whenever they're in that environment of doing something they enjoy, they're going to be more willing to open up in those moments. And I think it's really special.
That's such an amazing answer. Aiden, what do you think? You haven't been, I mean, you still live at home, but and you're not under your parents' rule like you were just a year ago when you're in high school.
Yeah. What I've noticed in the middle school ministry is you just got to break through that wall of, we just talked about conversation and getting through to them. They have this huge, thick wall from culture that they've built up, where they're like, I don't want to talk. And I've even talked to students and I've noticed things, also observe, notice what's wrong with them. Mm-hmm. I've noticed things with some students. I'm like, hey, what's up? Nothing's wrong. But I there was a time where I just waited. We talked for like 2 hours, but the first hour we just sat in silence and just broke that word. And then tears came out, and then it was a great conversation. But like breaking through that wall.
Yeah.
Because that's what they need. They
so
need
it's a commitment. You got to be committed to get to the open conversation. And I think what you're saying is a lot of people would just be like, at the first hour, for my goodness, I'm done. But you're willing, you care about them so much, you're willing to invest in that relationship long enough to get to the answer. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I do know that some of the best talks that come in your family are late at night when you guys get home from stuff. Surely. Your parents are masters at that. Y'all have great conversations late at night, and I think that's a huge positive in your family.
I've got three quick ones.
Okay.
One, pay attention to their phone. Life 360, parental controls, charge their phone in your room.
Say that again. People aren't going to hear that. Tell me, what do you mean by that? You mean a parent can own that phone that they pay for?
Yes. It is your, while they're under your house. Now, I might have students hate me for this, but it's your phone before it's theirs. And like we said, they have the world access to their fingertips, and you've got to manage that. And so I would say every parental control you can find in the book, use it. And then obviously as they get older, you can gain trust and gain relationship with your students and figure that out. But parental controls, Life 360, know where they are and charge their phone in your room. Do not give them access to a phone late at night. I know for me, we had very limited access to social media, and we got into stuff late at night. And so I can't imagine.
What is it? Your house, it was 9 o'clock at 9 when y'all were in high school or whatever. Yeah. All the phones went to the family room and they all plugged in together. Yeah.
They're not going to like it, but I promise when they look back at it, they'll appreciate it because they'll know, you know, what you protected them from.
It's just the social media they're seeing, but on social media, and they're not just getting the news. They're getting, we didn't get into that, but porn and everything else you can imagine. It's so.
The exposure that they have is insane. So protect it. To model what you want to see in them. If you want them praying, you pray in front of them. If you want them reading their Bible, my parents, every single day when I woke up, I would go down the stairs. My mom was reading her Bible at the kitchen table. That's what I grew up with. And to me, that I model that because my mom modeled it. And so model what you want to see in them. And then third is just there's no such thing as too much love and encouragement. Like if you think that you're saying, I appreciate you, I'm proud of you, I love you, you might be thinking you say it enough, but to them, like we said, they need it. They crave it. Don't let a day go by where you're not speaking life over them, saying who they are when they leave the door. They might think it's cheesy. They might think it's corny, but we believe that the word of God does not return void, and speak life into your kids because you never know what day they're going to have. And you want to start them off with truth. Again, because you don't know what's getting spoken over them throughout the rest of the day. And there's never too much of that.
I love that. And I hope that this today would bring up a lot of questions for people listening. I hope that we didn't answer everything because I hope this just starts a conversation. So honestly, you know, if you're listening or watching, you can DM me. You can, if you've got my phone number, you can text me. You can comment that you need to talk to me in the comments, and I will get them. I will get them to one of you guys. I've got a lot of years in parenting. Ourselves, our boys are now 40 and 37 and 35, and I told you about all the grandkids, but we will get help, right? We'll get help to parents and grandparents that really want to dig deeper and know what's going on. But if you're in the Albuquerque area and your student is not involved in a student ministry, I'm telling you, you get them to Citizen Church on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. and they're going to see life change. And if they go to another church, then get there, attend and be faithful to where you are. It's I love students, and I don't think my husband and I were youth pastors for 13 years, and I don't think I'll ever not love what the next generation brings to our lives, because amidst all the other things, they're fresh, they're funny, they're smarter than I ever could have been, and they have so much to offer. So I want to thank you guys for spending this time with me, and I know how much you love these Gen Z and Gen Alpha, and Kim, would you just close out in prayer? Let's pray for our students and people that are listening. And we're going to pray that this is a change day for a lot of people.
I love what you said. It's a partnership. Like, it is not us against parents. It is us partnering with families.
You're their advocate. You're a parent champion.
Yes, yes.
And you're going to...
We're the parent mascot.
We're the mascot. And you're going to be... Everything parents say at home, you're going to say it too. And students go, oh... It's not just my parents. Everybody thinks this.
I did the same thing with my parents. Everything my parents would say would go in one ear, not the other. Someone else would say it, one of my leaders. That's true.
My kids, grown kids, the same way. I said that to you. And they're like, they hear this revelation. I'm like, no, I said that 10 years ago. Anyway, Kim, let's pray over these kids and students across America.
Yeah.
And that they will become the world champions and changers that we believe they are.
Mm-hmm. God, we just come before you right now, so grateful for the time that we get to talk, not just about Gen Z, Gen Alpha, but God, your children, God, the kids, the students that you love, that you've created. And God, we know that while there are challenges, there are things that they are facing that we can't even comprehend or understand fully. God, we know so much that you have instilled power and strength into this generation, that they are meant to be world changers. And God, we pray that you would use us as older mentors, as parents, as family members, older siblings, God, to pour in godly wisdom, that you would use us, challenge us to be what we need to be in their lives, God, that you would guide us to have the right conversations, that you would open us up to understand the areas that we are weak, God, that we need your help in, but ultimately so that this generation can do more than any previous generation. We believe in the power that they have and the change that they can spread across our city and spread across our nation, Lord. We love you so much, and it's in your name we pray. Amen.
Thanks, you guys. Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kwoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.